6:06 a.m. Broadcasting live from our studios on Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee. It's Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. We have a terrific program for you today. In the 7 o'clock hour, Neil McCabe joins us at 7:15. Then there's a pointy-headed liberal, Scott Cohn, from CNBC, who lives in Santa Cruz, California, who's written a story about all the idiots at CNBC that have decided that Tennessee is the ninth worst state in the country to live in. They're just complete idiots, and I'm going to expose his idiocy on air at 7:30. Meanwhile, of course, Crom Carmichael joins us at 6:30, and we'll have a commentary from him. But right now, in studio, our very good friend, an outstanding attorney and founder of and president of Tennessee Firearms Association, Mr. John Harris. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's always a delight to have you here in studio. I'll start off with a poll that was released yesterday, released on Monday by the Trafalgar Group. They're very good pollsters, by the way. And it's covered at Just the News. Headline, Americans trust armed citizens more than law enforcement to stop mass shooters, poll finds. Well, I will add to that, John, duh.
Exactly.
So talk to our audience about two recent instances in the news that illustrate that point, I think, dramatically. In Indiana, a 22-year-old armed citizen stopped and killed a mass murderer before he could do more damage. And then, of course, the Uvalde, Texas debacle, where well over 300 law enforcement officers, I don't know how to say this other than they cowered in the hallways for more than an hour as a gunman murdered 19 innocent school children and two school teachers. Your thoughts, John Harris?
Well, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, unfortunately, part of that problem, I think, comes from the trend in potentially in law enforcement that they will step down and not engage. I mean, we saw that in Nashville, 2 years ago with the courthouse burn and Metro officers, you know, the guys that patrol on the street where the blue were there ready to defend the courthouse from the protesters that John Cooper, our mayor, invited to come down and participate. And then they were ordered, as I understand it, to basically abandon the courthouse and let them have at it. But you saw that, as you indicated, the contrast between the mall shooter and Uvalde. And it's not necessarily a surprising situation that civilians can and will step up in situations where law enforcement either just can't get there fast enough or they're not already on the scene, or when they do get there, like in Uvalde, they've got such chain of command and operating procedures and policies that they don't know anymore whether or not to shoot after the lawsuits we've seen in the last 10 years with officers who do use force and sometimes use too much force. All of a sudden are criminally prosecuted like Delkey was, civilly prosecuted for damage claims in the millions of dollars, again, like Delkey was. You know, officers are put in a tough situation.
John, I got to read this story from you know, a local news station in Louisville. You're not going to believe this.
1 minute.
The Indiana man who prays for quickly ending the rampage of a mass shooter was breaking mall rules on Sunday when he entered the building with a firearm. A statement posted to the Greenwood Park Mall website says, "We grieve for the victims of yesterday's horrific tragedy at the Greenwood Mall. Violence has no place in any other community. We are grateful for the strong response of first responders, including the heroic actions of the Good Samaritan who stopped the suspect." Authorities said 22-year-old Elisha Dickin of Seymour, Indiana, was shopping at the mall with his girlfriend when a gunman fired into the food court. Dickin shot his pistol, apparently it was a Glock, 10 times before the gunman collapsed from his wounds, attempting to retreat to the mall restrooms. That's what stopped more killings there.
At a distance of an estimated 40 yards.
That's impressive.
It's substantial. That's impressive. Him to have an
for a 22-year-old kid with no military background or no police training. That makes the point, doesn't it? We'll have more when we get back. This is the Tennessee Star Report. He's John Harris. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. 6:18 a.m., joined in studio by our very good friend, John Harris of the Tennessee Firearms Association. Here's the play-by-play, if you will, the blow-by-blow of the incident in the Greenwood Mall a couple days ago in Indiana. Greenwood Police Department said a review of surveillance video shows the suspect, a 20-year-old man with 100 rounds of ammunition and a rifle, began firing at 5:56:48. 5:56:48 is when he began firing. And he shot 24 rounds, killed three people, injured many. Wait for this. At 5:57:03 p.m., 15 seconds later, Elisha Dickin, an armed bystander, fired on the shooter from 40 yards away. Within 15 seconds from when the shooting began, Dickin fired 10 rounds, hitting the shooter as the shooter tried to retreat into the bathroom but collapsed and died. An autopsy found the shooter was shot 8 times. None of those were self-inflicted. That's an amazing performance by this young 22-year-old hero, Elisha Dickens. And John, if that happened in Tennessee, what would the current laws have done? How would this have been influenced by current law?
Tennessee law is a lot more harsh in view of the Mr. Dickens or the civilian in this instance.
Really?
Yeah. In his situation, the mall was posted, but in that state, according to news reports, it's treated as criminal trespass.
So the mall posted, you can't bring a firearm?
Correct, is my understanding from news reports.
Okay,
but that
from
meant
news reports.
The way they did it, that he had to be asked by some mall representative to leave the property and put the gun in his car and then maybe come back in.
If they knew he had the
gun. If they knew he had it. In Tennessee, the law is different. Assuming the mall had posted in compliance with the state statute, it had the right signage on it,
mm-hmm.
he would have committed the crime the moment he walked into the mall, and there would have been no requirement that he be asked to leave or remove the weapon from the mall. The other component of it is that although we have what's referred to as a safe harbor statute, which means he couldn't be convicted of illegally having the gun in the mall, he might still be subjected to being arrested, prosecuted, and tried, and it would be a jury's decision as to whether or not his use of the gun was justifiable.
Okay, well, what should we do to fix that here in Tennessee?
Well, it's another example of where, with the Republican supermajority for the last 12 years, they have just overwhelmingly failed to step up and take a look at a statutory structure that they inherited from the Democrats and clean it up to make it reconciled with the Second Amendment and, more importantly, what civilians think the law is.
Because what you just told me about the law, A, makes no common sense.
None.
And B, I would not have known that was the law here in Tennessee. But also, very interesting what you said. They inherited these statutes, this infrastructure from basically Democrats. Because Democrats ran the state until 2010.
Absolutely, they did.
Yeah.
And there have been some minor improvements in that 12-year period. But with a Republican supermajority that runs every campaign ad you get in your mailbox saying they support your Second Amendment rights,
yeah.
This Republican supermajority says one thing and does another because they haven't done it.
So let's talk about this. It's important that the state laws allow armed citizens to be able to defend themselves and fellow unarmed citizens when there's a mass shooter incident. And I would say if these incidents take place in places with bad, even worse laws, then there is less of a possibility there will be an armed citizen willing to step up, it would seem to me.
That's exactly right. And there's actually some data out there. There are statistics that the federal government keeps on justifiable homicides, which is what the mall shooting was.
Right.
Okay? And the data is broken out from the chart that I have from 2007 to 2020, and it compares justifiable shootings by law enforcement officers in the scope of their job versus justifiable shootings, homicides by private citizens. And starting off in 2007, the data showed law enforcement justifiably killed 398, but civilians nationwide killed 257.
Okay.
What's interesting about the data trend is those numbers started to merge in about 2007, 2008. So the civilian shootings were going up. The law enforcement shootings peaked a little bit after that, but they've been coming down.
Justifiable homicide, as determined by the law enforcement, or who determines whether it's a justifiable homicide?
It's typically a determination based upon law enforcement, district attorney, even jury trial reviews. But ultimately, they're somehow ruled justifiable. But what's interesting about the data trend is the last 2 years that they have data, 2019 and 2020, in both of those years, the number of justifiable shootings by civilians exceeded those nationwide by law enforcement.
Does this explain, and this is, it's hard to wrap your mind around this. I can only call this the cowardly reticence of 300-plus law enforcement officers in Uvalde who didn't go in for over an hour to take out that shooter who killed 21 people, innocent people. That one is so bizarre. What are your thoughts on that, and why did that happen
way? Well, it is extremely bizarre and disappointing. It may also be an anomaly or an outlier, but it happened. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's such an impact on society that Chief Drake was, you know, in the news just yesterday assuring Metro school officials that if something like Uvalde
happened here, Nashville Police Chief Drake,
John Drake, that he would assure them that Metro police officers would not be standing outside huddling waiting an hour, that they would rush in. And I think they're trained to do it that way, but we've not had an incident like that locally in Nashville to test what the actual policies are.
We've not had an incident yet.
Yet.
But there will be an incident, I think, at some point in time because of the general decline of society. That's my view.
Particularly in the blue cities in Tennessee.
Yeah. And blue cities everywhere. Although Uvalde, Texas now, I think that it's a very rural area.
Yes.
I think it's sort of leans Democrat. I don't know exactly what the makeup is there. But there's something weird about the old boy network there. Good old boy. It just didn't work right in Uvalde.
Oh, it completely broke down.
Totally. It's the worst breakdown, I think, of law enforcement in my memory. And I think it may well be an outlier. Right, because I mean, the job of being a police officer today is a very, very difficult job, and you know they're not backed up, and so therefore they look at this and they say, well, if I go in, am I going to be prosecuted with a crime?
Officer Delkey,
yeah,
a good example. You know, at what point is that officer got a second guess and say, is it worth my life? But more importantly, my job, my career, my family's security.
That's what's going through their head, I think.
I think, right? Potentially so.
I've not been a law enforcement officer, but I would guess, and we ought to have some of them on to talk about this, John. Well, John Harris, it is a delight to have you in, and in person. The best way to do it, right?
I enjoy it in person. It's easier than calling in on the phone.
And we'll have you back when when we talk about the agenda of the Tennessee Firearms Association for the next session of the Tennessee General Assembly. John, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, it'll be Crom Carmichael in studio.